This is Nightline on the VOCM Big Land Radio Network. The opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily those of this station. And now, your host, Jonathan Richler.
Good evening, everybody. June 26, 2017. Terrible news to discuss tonight. Call in if you have any up-to-date information. There is a fire on Froude Avenue. Looks like it's happening in the housing units. That's as much as we really know, except that there are two houses gone. That's in the Mundy Pond area of St. John's. And to all those who are wondering about intersections, and thanks, Ed Flynn, for pointing this out on Twitter. Follow along at VOCM Nightline. It's either going to be Vimy Avenue or Vickers. And the corner, of course, is Blackmarsh. That's the major intersection. So watch out. Your major, major intersection will be Cashin Avenue in Blackmarsh, if you know where that's to. It is in the Mundy Pond Road, close to the Legion, close to Evergreen Recycling. Absolutely horrifying. You're hearing the reports come in, some recorded audio some time ago, right here on VOCM Airwaves. You can see it, listen to it on VOCM.com. Apparently people have lost some animals. There is at least one person who is being treated for smoke inhalation. But from all the photos that I see, there are a bunch of friggin' looky-loos all over the place. Out there with their phone cameras, whether they're on their bicycles or they're walking or they're taking their animals out there for a stroll. Give it up. Go home out of it. Be safe. You're inhaling smoke. It's not smart. And you could potentially be disrupting the first responders who are trying to make sure that everybody's okay. Honestly, why is it that every time there's a friggin' disaster, a tragedy, a potential emergency, you have all these looky-loos that go over there and pretend they're friggin' Geraldo, and they pull out their cameras on their telephones, and they try and get an exclusive. Enough! Just like you wouldn't run into a burning building to save somebody because you're not qualified to be a first responder, unless you are, you shouldn't show up to an emergency and obstruct the people that need to get the stuff done to save people. Cats, budgies, lizards, whatever. Get out of the way. That's my opinion, obviously. You want to talk about that tonight? I really do. I hope everybody is safe. I honestly do. I hope everyone's cat is safe. Everyone's dog. Everyone. I hear there were people visiting their family members who have lost their medication. That's absolutely staggering. So here we go. This is a perfect example of how to test an emergency preparedness situation. What do you do if your medication that you need for your heart condition, diabetes, anxiety, whatever it is, what do you do if that goes up in smoke? What if you don't carry it around in your pocket? Can you call your pharmacy to get an emergency prescription? Can you call your physician tomorrow? I would just imagine that the lineup at some clinics would be even longer tomorrow. But these folks are probably having to worry about what warm, thank goodness, not they don't need too much warm clothing on a night like this. Change of underwear, change of socks, change of anything. Shower. Where do we go? Where do we go from here? St. John's Status of Women Council has tweeted out that they're going to keep their, or they're going to open their shelter. I don't know if it's just for women or if it's for everybody. I'm not sure. We're hoping to speak with either Meech Cain or Jerry Lynn Mackey shortly. They are on the scene. And I think it's important that we continue to report this and hear from those who are alive, because this is horrifying on a warm night like this. And Walter Harding has sent out a message, and I think it's worth repeating. Maybe you should pass on the fire pits tonight. There's enough smoke going around. That's one thing. I don't know if you were in the neighborhood where there's smoke, to be honest, that you would be interested in lighting a fire in your backyard because it's probably too smoky. But he did say that the folks downwind would do well to shut off their HVAC and close their windows. I don't know if anyone is advising this type of caution, but thanks, Walter. Thanks very much. We're going to hear from a few people tonight about a few things. One of the things that I'm wondering about, I just came back from beautiful, beautiful Blackhead just out there by Broad Cove, Adams Cove, Ocopic Cove. Fantastic. Spent about a day and a half there. Two sleeps. Icebergs everywhere. Maggoty with them. Good vibes, good people everywhere. Wonderful roads. Wonderful garbage collection. We did go on a couple of hikes, and we did pick up some Coors Light cans and some plastic beer holders. You know what those things are. The turtle traps. The seagull straitjackets. But for the most part, I got to say, it was pretty darn clean. It certainly wasn't the city of St. John's, I'll tell you what. Great area. Wonderful area. However, it was the fourth time driving from St. John's to Blackhead that myself and the Costco partner, well, third time with her and one time with my buddy Darren as we went to Bay Roberts, fourth time that we missed the flip and turnoff. Kept going, ended up in Whitburn. Had a generally a snack at Monty's. Turned around, felt like an idiot. So I'm putting this out there, not because so I lost 20 minutes of my life. It is more important, I think, and all these times, at least three out of four, we were cognizant looking for signage, and we kept missing it. So A, yes, we have a grade five. B, I think we have a signage issue on our highways. And folks, I put it out there on Twitter on whenever it was, Sunday. Do we have enough? Well, the question I was asking is, what's the difference between the green signs and the brown signs? It seems like the brown signs are only to advertise ponds, right? But here's the question. Do we have enough signage? If you're in other cities, if you're in other parts of the country, if you have five exits, each of which are going somewhere else, Brigus Junction, Carbonier, Bay Roberts, whatever, Whitburn, after each exit, your signage is there, and it will show you that there's one less exit to come. And that's sort of an advance notice. But as that turn off to Carbonier, it's just not there. I don't know. We keep looking and looking. It's there on the way back. Anyone want to talk about that? Tell me I need to go get my eyes checked. You're welcome to call the show. We're going to talk about this. I want to know, where is the Capelin? Have you spotted any? Is it rolling? What's happening? And what are your thoughts on closing the Capelin fishery in order to keep the rest of our food sources fed? I would love to discuss that this week. The food fishery is happening this weekend. We're speaking with Kimberly Orme of Fishing for Success down in Petty Harbor at around 9 o'clock. But if you want to talk about that tonight, producer Patrick Myler and I are more than happy to do so. We're going to start the show right now on line number one with William. Hello, William.
Hi, Jonathan.
Not bad. A little sunburned.
I got a very serious topic for you now. What the government doing with the poor, sick people. I'm disabled for work. I get welfare and Eastern Health Supplement top-up because of my health. Social, and this was proved, I got the letter here for June the 1st. Had a social worker come in and see me today, told me there's changes. They got to take you back because the government spoke because of Musgrave Falls. That's what the social worker told me.
I'm not understanding what you're saying, and I apologize for that. William, are you saying that your health benefits are being cut back as a result of the debt that we have for Muskrat Falls?
That's what the social worker told me.
And why would the social worker know this unless they work in the Department of Finance?
I don't know, Jonathan. I can't speak for the lady.
But you are.
I'm speaking for what the lady told me.
I don't understand the difference, but in this case, the lady, who is a social worker, seems to know the inner workings of the Department of Finance?
I suppose. I don't know her. I never asked her, was she in finance? I didn't go into that detail.
All right, so when you say that your benefits are being cut, could you describe to us what you mean?
Okay, with the help for Eastern Health, I get around $11,000 a year, live on for rent, my health needs, etc.
And this is paid for from which department of the government?
Social Services and Eastern Health.
So how much is Social Services and how much is Eastern Health?
Eastern Health was $230 a month, which is one-third of my monthly income.
Uh-huh.
And that's what they're taking me, leaving me with two-thirds. And what the letter says from Eastern Health, this is the top-up, so make sure I could survive on my health needs.
And what was the top-up for specifically?
For so I could afford my utilities and for my personal care allowance, they call it.
What exactly is the supplement called?
It's called Annual Review Finance Eastern Health Community Support Program. The phone service I approved effective June the 1st. This was when it was approved. I'm getting this 10 years now, Jonathan, because of my health.
So it is called the Community Supports Program. I'm just going to go to the website here. The Community Supports Program is based on the belief that individuals have a right to live in the community and have access to required supportive services. It's provided. Services provided under this program focus on supporting individuals, families, and care providers by promoting independence, community inclusion, safety, and overall well-being. Services provided include financial assessment services, home support program, intervention services, residential service programs, special assistance program, special child welfare allowance, and supports for adults who may need protection. William, which one are you receiving?
For my health.
So would that be financial assessment services or home support, I guess?
Home support.
So you don't have anybody that comes to your house, though?
No, my daughter helps me.
Okay. Does this money go towards paying for medical supplies?
No, it goes to help me pay my heat and light and my personal care because of my conditions.
Okay. And do you actually see the money or does it pay your bills?
I see the money.
So you see the money, but the money is supposed to pay for your bills.
It helps me pay for my bills, yes, Jonathan.
Okay, because I don't see that here listed in the Community Supports Program, but perhaps I'm looking at an out-of-date website. So they do offer financial assessment, right? Did they assess you? Is that what the letter states?
Yes, and this assessment was done and approved effective June the 1st. Now it's June the 26th.
Yeah.
Now it's not approved anymore, and that's why Mr. said government's in too much debt, and they can't offer service no more because of Musgrave Falls.
That's shocking. William?
And she also told me, she just came down from Shea Heights, and somebody was on it for 25 years, a person that really needed it, and she had to take it from them.
So, William, did you get an official letter stating that you will no longer be receiving this?
She will send me out one.
Sorry.
She will send me out one. She came to a home visit.
So a social worker came to your door and said that the government is broke because of Muskrat Falls and is therefore not providing you any more assistance from Eastern Health.
Yes.
That sounds to me like someone who's overstepping their boundaries. Is this your caseworker by any chance?
Yes.
So this person will no longer be your caseworker because the funding is cut?
Yes.
Is there a reassessment on a monthly basis?
I could repeal this now, Jonathan.
Are you going to?
Oh, yes. But there's cutting a lot of people. A lot of people that can't fight for themselves, Jonathan.
Yeah.
A lot of sick people that really need this to survive. And they're picking on the sick and the ones that's down and out to do this.
This is absolutely
and
shocking.
I don't think it's right.
William, I would love to know the actual name of the program that's being cut, but in the meantime, I'll call Community Support Program tomorrow. Do you need a phone number? Because I can give you a contact number.
She goes, send me all the numbers to repeal and that. But, Jonathan, it's got to be something. You don't take down from the sick and poor in your community. That's something you don't do, Jonathan. Somebody's sick in that, and you told them to the wolves?
Well, I don't think that's a fair assessment. If there's only one-third being cut of the actual assistance, that's certainly not being thrown to the wolves, but it is a significant chunk into your monthly income, $11,000 a year, if that's only 30% of what you're getting in. William, that's not a lot of money.
Tell me about it, Jonathan.
Yeah. All right. Let's see what I can find out tomorrow. Thank you for bringing this to our attention, and keep us posted when you send in an appeal, okay?
Yes, but there's got to be something done for this this government, because they're taking it again from the people that's down and out, and it's going to be the children, and it's going to be the people that can't stand up for themselves. Now, they took that. Don't forget, the 1st of June, the lights goes up for everyone, and they're letting the poor and down and out go further out. How many people are not making ends meet, gotta choose to pay the light bill or eat?
Well, there are, of course, programs within Newfoundland Power that assist people below a certain income as well, right, William?
Yeah, but the thing is, it should never be.
But, of course, that doesn't help you when your groceries cost more because they have to keep their lights on.
And yes, and don't forget, their groceries going up. And because of my health, I only could eat certain things because I'm on no sodium diet.
Okay, so what can't you eat?
I can't eat nothing with salt or stuff like that.
Well, that sounds pretty smart.
You know, and...
Most of us should do that.
You know, and and with that said, I said, how am I going to make it? She said, if worst comes to worst, we put you in retirement home. Because you help, you qualify for it.
Interesting. It sounds to me like your social worker is a bit of an advocate there. Sorry, William, I didn't understand anything you just said because I was speaking. Go ahead.
Did they pay $4,000 or $5,000 a month to put me in retirement home to keep me, but instead of giving me the $230 so I could stay in my own home? That don't make sense, son.
Yeah, well, I don't know all the facts, but by the logic that you're saying, it doesn't make a lot of sense. No, William, thank you. Let me see what I can find out. I appreciate your call tonight.
Okay, thank you.
I hope you win your appeal. Cheers.
Okay, bye bye. Thank you.
If anyone else is in this situation, if anyone else has received a letter with respect to the community supports program, I'd be grateful if you sent along some information. Email nightline@vocm.com. Twitter @vocmnightline. They're going to exhume the body of Salvador Dali. I heard this on the radio today as we were driving back from the bay. And gross. That's all I have to say. This is for a paternity suit. So this is an interesting aspect because Salvador Dali left his estate to Spain because he had no children. This is an example, I think, of the law trumping respect for the dead. And to the point where this man's body is being exhumed. I don't know what his religion was. I don't know what his morals and ethics were. It doesn't matter. It's immaterial. The man is dead and buried. We're going to go to the break. We'll be right back.
Call now, 273-5211, or 1-888-590-8626. 1-888-590-VOCM. Nightline will return on the VOCM Big Land FM radio network. This is Nightline on the VOCM Big Land FM radio network.
Welcome back to the show. Somebody called in is requesting that I don't say the F word anymore. Boss, if I can't say frig... I won't. That's the last time. It's off my list. It's up there with... I can't say that one either. I'm sorry. I try not to swear, and I try to use alternate words, and I thought F-R-I-G was a good one. Can I say refrigerate? Would that be all right? Darn it. These broadcasting standards are really bringing my... I can't say darn... You're kidding, Patrick. If anyone calls in to tell me that I can't say darn it, I don't know what I'm going to do. We're going to line number two. We're speaking with Sylvia Medes. Hi, Sylvia.
Hi, how are you today?
I'm good. How are you?
Well, I had a good day, despite the fact that I couldn't get a wheelchair accessible taxi to go down to the splash pad.
Okay, so the wheelchair accessible taxi cab would have dropped you off by the swimming pool on, what is it, Military Road?
No, we're in Paradise. We have a splash pad in Paradise now.
Ah, okay. Well, thank you for being specific there, because I automatically assumed, being the townie boy that you meant St. John's.
Yeah, no, we're in Paradise. Every time, this is not the first time it's happened, because when I get paid, I take the young lady that I work with. We go out for a whole day and enjoy out shopping and whatever.
When you get paid, what do you mean? I'm sorry.
I'm a home care worker.
I see. Okay. Yeah. All right.
So when I get my money, we go out, have a bit of fun,
that's
whatever.
Nice.
But this has happened more than once. I have called to get a taxi back to the house, or I have called to get a taxi out to the splash pad, and I get the same answer every time I call. We only have 3 cars on the go.
Yeah.
And I get the same answer every single time, and I can't, like, she's in a wheelchair, and there's no way, you know?
Are you, Carol, calling a Paradise company?
No, I'm calling Newfound. It's the only one that's got the wheelchair accessible taxi.
Yeah, and listen, I hear the frustration in your voice. I'm just trying to get all the information. I'm sorry if I'm frustrating you with these.
No, you're not frustrating me, my love.
Okay, they do have accessible taxis. I thought that they had more than three. Is it possible that just some of them are in the shop?
No, there was one time that they said they had three broke down,
okay,
and put them in the shop.
Yeah.
But today they said they only had three working today.
Oh, no.
And this has happened more than once. And it's very frustrating because...
Yeah.
Paradise, yes, we do have a taxi company, but they don't have wheelchair-accessible taxis.
And here's what's interesting. Last year, in the budget, there was a number of dollars available for what they called an accessible taxi program. There were actually, it wasn't really a lot of money. It was only $50,000 divided between two grants. So I guess what happened was... one company jumped at the wonderful opportunity to make an accessible cab. I'm not sure how much of the $25,000 could retrofit more than one vehicle. I would assume the $25,000 would be for two cars. I don't know. We're going to try and get Newfound Cabs on the phone here, and maybe they can give us some data. But it's not a lot of money. And Sylvia, you bring up a very interesting and important reality. There are more and more of us who are challenged with mobility issues. Particularly if we look at the amount of diabetes that we have amongst our population. And therefore, we're going to need more of this. Yeah.
Yeah. But this young lady, she doesn't have diabetes. She's got cerebral palsy.
Again, I was only mentioning one aspect of the challenges.
Right. No, there's more than one person in a wheelchair. And I'm sure there's more than one person in a wheelchair in Paradise that we could actually use the wheelchair accessible taxis here, and it would make life a lot easier. I'm at the point now, I'm going in to, actually, believe it or not, I'm 45 years old, and I'm going in to take my written test to get my driver's license.
It's all good.
In self-defense of all this.
I can empathize with you, believe me.
It's crazy. Seriously, it's crazy because... We have the thing that confuses me the most is not just the wheelchair taxis, because we got Metrobus in here now.
Yeah.
And you think that following Metrobus, the Go Bus would be in here.
Mm.
And then me and the young lady that I work with, we'd be able to, we got a Go Bus card. All we have to do is fill it up, call 24 hours ahead of time, make a booking,
mm-hmm,
and go wherever we want to go. We can do that every day. It's only like $250 for...
Does the Go Bus go to Paradise?
No.
No. It's a St. John's thing, right?
Yeah, but the thing is, we got the Metro Bus. Why not the Go Bus?
You have one route to Paradise.
Yeah, 30.
And it's an experimental route, to the best of my understanding. It's on it's a pilot project.
Well, it was only supposed to be for 1 year.
Right, and it was so popular that they've decided to keep it. The Go Bus is an entirely separate issue, and it's subsidized for St. John's residents because it's paid for by municipal taxes to St. John's, right?
I would love to see the Go Bus in here. I really would.
Me too. We're going to talk to Ron Ellsworth about a different issue tonight, so I'm going to bring this up with him, and he can... give us a little bit more information. So don't touch that dial, Sylvia, because Deputy Mayor Ellsworth is very much an advocate on accessibility issues. And no doubt he's furiously taking notes right now.
Mm-hmm.
And by that, I don't mean that he's angry. I just mean that he's taking a lot of notes. And he'll probably be able to provide us with some info. So, Sylvia, if you had any questions to ask the City of St. John's, you go right ahead and I'll pass it on to him.
Okay. That'd be great. I was just wondering if there's any chance that we can get the Go Bus in here, because it's really frustrating trying to get a hold of a taxi to a wheelchair accessible cab just to go somewhere. And, it's to the point where I don't drive. I don't like driving, but I'm going to have to get my driver's license, and I really need to know if we can actually come about a way of getting the Go Bus in here, because it makes things a heck of a lot easier for me.
Well, one of the things that you should do is call your council and see what their plans are. Call your MHA And I will ask the Deputy Mayor of St. John's on your behalf. And don't touch that dial, my friend. We'll have this conversation in a matter of minutes.
Okay.
Thank you, Sylvia.
Thank you.
Any final thoughts?
No, that's about it. I mean, the thing is, I'm not doing this for me. I'm doing that, you know, doing this for her, because if we can get the Go Bus in here, I'll be out the Byring Park almost on a daily basis if it's sunny out.
But we need to make sure that our parks are accessible for everybody. You're absolutely right.
Mm-hmm.
And transportation is part of it. Sylvia, mm-hmm. Thank you. You bring up a great point. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
All right. What do you think of that? So we're going to go to, we're having a conference call. We're going to go to line number one. We're speaking with Virginia Berry. Virginia, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Deadly. And Aaron Power on line two. Aaron.
Hi there.
Fantastic. How are you doing, ladies?
Great. How are you?
I am good. I'm very excited. I was at a flea market today. I bought an old, hopefully it works, electric coffee percolator for basically two cups. And I also picked up a couple of really cool glasses with the four suits in a deck of cards. You know, the club, the spade, the heart, and the diamond. Back when I was a kid in the 70s, there in Quebec, there were these mustards that were sold in these glass jars. And the idea was you could collect them. And that you had then, at the end of the day, a set of glasses. So those really threw me back. I love finding some flea markets. And it's always a challenge in this province because the circulation of stuff doesn't go very far because we don't have roads which lead to other provinces. You always find more interesting stuff in larger centers with roads that go to other cities and provinces. In Newfoundland and Labrador, we have some challenges. You have started a vintage emporium. I heard about the first one. I'm excited to learn more because I think everything is over 25 years old, yes?
Yep. Yep. That's right. The rules that we put on our vendors. And we're bringing in folks who have a good eye for picking, in a sense. So it's a bit different than your typical flea market where you'll get a bit of yard sale and the treasures you're looking for. We like to think everyone we're bringing on board, their table has already been picked to have only treasures.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I gotcha. The ones that cost too much, they're not a VHS cassette, and therefore could attract more individuals who aren't looking for diehards number one and two, and find something that they can put on their as a centerpiece for their Thanksgiving dinner, for example.
That's right. Well, we like to offer a variety of items. Like, you can find things that will be, you know, from $5 to $10 all the way up to, you know, higher end items. So there's a bit of something for everybody, but we guarantee that everything is of a very high quality and a specific standard of vintage.
I love it.
Antique product.
How do we find out more about it? Is there a website for the Vintage Emporium, or are you on the old social media?
We are currently on Facebook right now. We've got an event page going. That's about it so far. We're kind of still developing the emporium a little bit. So,
you going to take it on the road?
No, we're going to keep it here in St. John's, but it's more just kind of developing, see how frequent we want to do it, and testing the market a little bit, seeing what public interest is, how often can we sustain this. Like you said, there's not as much old stuff here because we're on an island.
Right.
So we have to kind of test what can our vendors sustain and what market interest is out there. But so far we're getting really good feedback from the public.
What I love about your poster, first of all, it's the first one for Friday, the 16th of June. There's many things that I find interesting about this. First of all, your poster is really cool. It's old school.
Second,
it's Friday night, which is a great thing to do on Friday night, right? You go out and look
Absolutely.
At stuff. Third, you had a DJ spinning records. Now, that tickles my fancy because I used to be in the record business. I used to own a record store. Used to play records for a living. This is my thing, and it's fun to hear someone who actually plays records as opposed to these people that walk into a club with USB sticks and call themselves DJs. This sounds really neat. Who was the DJ?
Was my husband, Stephen Phillips. He is an avid record collector, and we spent about a week before the event kind of thumbing through his stacks, so we weren't bringing top radio hits. We were bringing something a little bit more obscure, but also like a good driving tempo to keep people interested and like keep the energy level up at the event. So
amazing.
He's spinning some harder to come by records, which is it's fun to hear because you don't know what you're listening to. So you want to go and talk to him and figure out what it is.
Stacks of Wax. So you are purveyors of jewelry, clothes. Here's something that I'm curious about: repurposed vintage wares. What does that mean?
Well,
we brought a few vendors on board. Yep, go ahead, Erin.
thank you. Well, that means that we've got, like Virginia was saying, we've got a few vendors on board who work with repurposed vintage material. So we have someone who's doing network with old fishing rope, making them into swings and mats. We also have another lady who is repurposing old silverware into jewelry.
Whoa.
There's another person that takes antique and vintage furniture and redoes them.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we mean when we say repurposed vintage items.
Love it. I will check out your event page. It's on the old face page. I tweeted out your contact information for vendors and for other inquiries, yasberry.fashion@gmail.com. Folks, you can check out that email right there on our Twitter feed at VOCM Nightline. But for those who are old school, and of course you are purveying old school stuff, do you have a telephone?
Yeah, I can give my phone number. It's
986-1015.
Mm-hmm.
When is the next Emporium happening?
The next one is going to be July 14th
mm-hmm.
at the Kirk again from 7 to 9:30.
I love the fact that you're doing it at the Kirk because it's such a cool, beautiful, religious institution. And, you know, people used to go there for many things, and now we can go there for more secular joys, shall we say. And it's a building that needs its own fundraising, and it certainly does fundraise, to try and keep it in and around. So it's great that you're using that building. Repurposing an old building filled with repurposed stuff. What a great theme that you folks have. Can't wait to drop by and check it out.
Great.
Thank you
so much.
Have a great night, ladies. Thank you so much.
Bye.
Bye-bye. So that was Erin Power and Virginia Berry, and they are responsible for the Vintage Emporium. I don't know about you, but I'm hopping over to Face Page now on the break and checking out what it's all about. Stay with you.
Call now, 273-5211, or 1-888-590-8626. 1-888-590-VOCM. Nightline will return on the VOCM Big Land FM radio network. This is Nightline on the VOCM Big Land FM radio network.
Welcome back to the show. I am William Shatner. No, I'm not. Here is a comment from Robert, a regular listener and commenter. And I appreciate each and every one of you who send us some emails. I agree with your signage comments, says Robert. I'm from Carbonear. Love Carbonear. If I didn't know where to turn off, I could easily miss the exit, he says. Something else bothers me. There are no ATV crossing signs on the highway or caution ATV crossing. Numerous places on the highway. I see it in other provinces, there are crossing signs. I don't know why we lag behind. It's like recycling and littering, I guess. Nobody does anything about it. Excellent comments, Robert. I'm trying my hardest to get the Minister of Transportation and Works on this week to discuss a number of things. And obviously, the Auditor General's report, scathing report on the, as Patty Daly would say, politics of pavement. And let's talk about this. We spoke with former Transportation Minister David Brazel about this back in the day. And interestingly enough, he said that some people chop those signs down for firewood. In theory, he said, if I remember correctly, there are supposed to be more signs, but people take them. That's pretty skeety. Saw a few people putting up signs on signposts as we were driving out, like taking advantage of the signs that are up there by government to put up their, you know, cod tongues, worms, or whatever signs. I don't think that's legal either. Let's talk about it. Let's continue it. And thank you, Robert, for your comments. Send them over to nightline@vocm.com. Right now, we're speaking with the manager of Newfound Cabs, Derek Hayter. Derek, it's been a while. How are you?
Not too bad. Yourself?
I'm very well. Thank you very much for calling in tonight. Sylvia had a dilemma today in Paradise, and it struck me as strange because I thought that there were more than three accessible taxis, so I thought perhaps maybe somewhere in the shop. You want to break it down for us?
Well, for starters, we don't have three. We have 12 in service.
Mm-hmm.
We also have an additional three we just took delivery of in the last month that are at the back of the stand in various stages of readiness, getting painted, getting equipped. And we have another three in production. It is our hope to have 18 in service by the time school starts again in September. So we have lots of these vans. The only problem is the demand for them is increasing, and is probably the easiest way to describe it sometimes is insatiable. Even with what we've got, we can't keep ahead of it at certain times of the day.
Wow. And are you taking advantage of that particular program from the what is now, I think, Children, Seniors, and Social Development? If you click on the actual link from Seniors, Wellness, and Social Development in July 20th to find out more information on the Accessible Taxi Program, it leads you to the front page for that new department. So I'm guessing it no longer exists. Can you confirm?
That part of it is something that's really in the bailiwick of the owners. I mean, my job is basically running the company.
Right on.
I'm familiar with the program, and we did have some startup funding from both the city and the provincial government.
Mm-hmm.
But we're at a point right now where I guess the easiest way to say it is it's fairly self-sustaining. But if the opportunity is there for additional funding to increase the fleet, we'll certainly look at it. But right now we're concentrating more on trying to keep up with what we got. So we knew that there was a demand when we got into this. We just never figured in our wildest dreams the demand would be as high as it is.
It's quite incredible, and congratulations for taking the initiative to do this. I know that your company won an award from the Coalition to Persons with Disabilities in the 2016 year. I know because I was in the room for the work that you've done to make transportation more accessible to all. So to Sylvia, who hopefully is still listening in, who was apparently informed that there are only three cabs on the road, what can we say to that?
I mean, there is the possibility that at 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning, there might only be three of them on the road. But generally, every day, even on the weekends, we have six or seven of them out. And during the weekdays, the entire fleet's out there.
Mm-hmm.
We're in the process now. We have approximately 21 or 22 drivers that are fully trained in these. And we have other drivers now. We're just in the process of getting them brought up to speed. Our training also includes not only how to work these vehicles and to make sure they're using the safety systems in them properly. We also train all our staff in the first aid with St. John Ambulance, including the AED endorsements and CPR.
Mm-hmm.
We also have the Coalition of Persons with Disabilities conducts a training course for us in understanding disability. And we also do programs with the CNIB and the CHHA. And as well, we just recently completed putting our 130-odd drivers through a program with the St. John's Staff Women's Council called Sexual Assault Awareness. And we're now looking into doing a program that St. John Ambulance, I believe, is the one that offers it. It's called Mental Health First Aid. The education of our drivers is an ongoing thing. It's not something we're going to stop if we find something that we figure is going to be a benefit not only to our drivers but to the people we serve.
That's beautiful.
We're going to continue to offer training.
Fantastic, Derek. Glad to hear that your company and others, I'm sure, are taking the initiative to make sure that there is a continuing education for your drivers, because it's that way in all professional services, and you are indeed a company that provides a professional service. You are unique in the sense that you are providing accessible vehicles. So that's an interesting one. And when we have, this is the way my mind works anyway, you say you have three in the shop. Is this just for general maintenance, you know, tire changes, et cetera, or does the equipment...
No, we don't have three in the shop. We have 12 in service, and we have three brand new ones that are in. The only reason they're in the shop is they're still getting them ready for service. I mean, they've just been painted. Now they're getting wired for meters and radios and this sort of thing. And then we have to get all the decking work done on them.
Okay.
So it's not a case of 12 minus 3. It's a case of 12 soon to be plus 3.
Okay.
If one of our vans goes down for any reason, it's first in line at the garage. The wheelchair vehicles take priority over every other taxi we got. Keeping them on the road is paramount.
Fantastic. And, of course, you go to Paradise, you go to Mount Pearl, you go wherever people require your services.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes. There is a need generally, I think, throughout the Northeast Avalon for this sort of service. It's not just confined to the city of St. John's.
That's very interesting to think about, of course. It's not just people who live in the metro regions who have challenges with mobility. They're all over the place.
Oh, yes.
So how do you get around when you're around the bay, for example?
Well, it gets a little more expensive, but where you want to go, we'll go. So, I mean, we are, to some degree, bounded by regulation that says our trips have to terminate or originate in the city of St. John's. But then again, there's no other municipalities in this greater St. John's area that's offering the accessible service. So I mean, you can't leave people in a bind.
Amazing. Thanks very much for your time, Derek, and thanks for the good things that you do within this particular industry. It's good to know that we have so many drivers out there who are being trained for everything that they should be. Because, listen, if there's one business that's very interesting, you folks see it all.
Yeah, but I can guarantee another thing, too, that the drivers that drive our wheelchair vehicles have often commented that this puts a much more positive, much more enjoyable spin on the work we do. Because it's a whole new area for us. And for the people whose lives, unfortunately, are tied to wheelchairs, we've given them a new freedom. And they keep telling us this every day. One of us hears this from some client, that we are giving them an opportunity to get out and around that they've never had before. And to know that you're impacting people's lives, that positive is a positive experience for our drivers.
Amazing. And good for you once again. Thanks for your time tonight, Derek.
Yeah, you're welcome, Jonathan.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
Good night. Bye.
And that is the manager of Newfound Cabs, Mr. Derek Hayter. And those are some good pieces of information. So, Sylvia, if you're listening, it's good to know that there is more. There are more than three cabs out on the road. God, what's up with the grammar? It's all those icebergs I was staring at. And that there are more coming. So 18 by the fall, 12 now, three more about to hit the road. So is it enough? Well, that's a good question. Are other companies taking this year to reconsider as to whether or not they can afford to put more accessible cabs? Because, you know, it's not easy. And I don't know how much more money is available from the department. As I said, this is pretty stinky. You go to the news release from July 20th, 2016. Stinky only because it really frustrates me when links don't work anymore. Department of Seniors, Wellness, and Social Development, as you know, it's no longer that department. The press release is called Enhancing Accessible Transportation. But if you go to the link that's provided, and of course it is still the same minister, Minister Sherry Gammon Walsh, more information on the Accessible Taxi Program is available at. There's a link. And you go there, and you go right to the front page of Children, Seniors, and Social Development. Nowhere is there anything about taxis. I put it in the search key that is at the government top of the website. Nothing. So if anyone can help me steer through this, please let me know. But there is, of course, a phone number here, 729-6048, for information as well. So I'll call them tomorrow and find out if the funding is still available, what the situation is. I would love to know. We're going to go to the news at the top of the hour, probably find out more information about the fire on Froude Avenue. But if anyone is out there, please feel free to give us a call. We'll be back after this.
Call now, 273-5211, or 1-888-590-8626. 1-888-590-VOCM. Nightline will return on the VOCM Big Land FM radio network. This is Nightline on the VOCM Big Land FM radio network.
Welcome back to the program. We're going to line number one. We're speaking with Deputy Mayor Ron Ellsworth. How are you, sir?
Good evening, Jonathan. How are you?
I'm very well. Deputy Mayor of the City of St. John's, I should say, because there was some confusion earlier with one of the callers. I assume that she was on her way to the splash pad at Bannerman Park, but it seems that it was in Paradise, so I need to clarify. We're talking the City of St. John's, and we're referring to the City of St. John's right now. And Deputy Mayor Ellsworth, some large day out there today.
It's a beautiful day, Jonathan, and originally you and I had agreed to chat about Discovery Day events this past weekend, but if it's okay with you, I'd like to forego that and just speak quickly on the Froude Avenue issue.
Absolutely, sir.
And then speak on the accessible component, if you could.
Let's do both.
Okay. Obviously, like a lot of people in the province at this point, not only in our city, but a lot of heartsick folks, including myself, thinking about the families that have been displaced and what they're facing and going through, you know, immediately. And, you know, obviously, we've lost some pets, but there doesn't seem to be any injuries to people at this point, and the first responders, as always, do a phenomenal job of putting themselves in harm's way to protect us Obviously, the heartfelt thank you to them, and you know, thoughts and prayers, obviously, with the families that are affected. Start to unfold, I was in contact with Minister Gamble Walsh, who's the minister responsible for housing. Our staff were in contact with Newfoundland Labrador Housing Corp staff. Mm-hmm. I know their staff were on site at Friar Avenue area assisting. I know Red Cross has been on site assisting. Social media is already lit up with people wanting to know what can be done to help the families that have been displaced.
How many have been displaced, Mayor, Deputy Mayor?
Well, the number, Johnson, is a moving target, because obviously most of us who are involved in, sharing information at this point are trying to stay away from the scene itself, because we're only being the way at the first responders.
Right.
The first and foremost, what needs to happen there is this fire needs to be dealt with, and the individuals affected need to be safely housed, and that's being taken care of by Newfoundland Labrador Housing Corp and Red Cross this evening. So all people will be looked after. The number of units affected, we're hearing varying numbers, and there's also multitude of units that have smoke damage, along with the ones that have been lost. In discussions with the minister this evening, I understand several of the units are accessible units, which causes some more heavy concern. So
right.
I'm checking with our staff, see if we have any options, because obviously the accessible units are in very high demand and very low supply. So we've had some connections with our senior staff and trying to figure out what opportunities are going to be there in the next couple of days. I know right now that the minister is meeting with the Housing Corp staff to, figure out a short-term plan and then come up with a long-term strategy. But, the Mayor O'Keefe and council and staff, we're all here to assist and do what we can. Obviously, it's Minister Gamble Walsh's department, and it's their lead on the Housing Corp lead. These are their tenants, but they are residents of St. John's, and more importantly, residents of our province. So
indeed.
There's no doubt, Jonathan, from my point of view, that once we get through this very tragic situation, that the community will rally, and we'll all be a part of that to assist the families displaced to rebuild their lives the best we can and to help them move forward. So for everybody's reached out, for everybody's involved, I heartfelt thank you for everything they've done. And, obviously safety is the paramount. So we'll ask people to stay away from Friar Avenue. I know everybody likes to go and see it, but stay away. Let the professionals, our frontline firefighters and RNC, who put themselves in harm's way to protect us, to carry out their work.
I just honestly don't get it. Why would people want to go see something like this? I mean, it's one thing if it's an unoccupied building, such as the Belvedere building, but these are people's homes. So to go there to watch a disaster unfold, I don't know. It leaves me with a bad feeling that there were so many people obstructing first responders, or potentially obstructing them, just to get some video on their phones.
Well, not only that, but we got to have respect for the families that are affected. They
right.
need to have this time to adjust themselves and to grieve and to come together. That is their community. It's a very close community, very strong community, and they need to be left alone and let them, as a community, support one another. And in the coming days, we can all come together to offer our supports.
100% agreed.
To this. No, I guess like most of you, it's sick to my stomach just thinking about what happened over there and what could have happened to be even worse case scenario. I'm just very thankful that at this point there's no injuries or worse for individuals. And, in the coming days, we'll all rally and assist where we can for sure. And, Minister Gamble Walsh and her staff have been on top of this from the beginning and connecting and reaching out to make sure that, everything's being done, the information's being shared. And I appreciate their ability to do that. And more importantly, their focus has been from the beginning and is now and will be for the next few days, the health and safety of the residents that are affected, and that's the primary concern for all of us.
Do we know if the fire is out?
No, I don't know that. And once again, like I said, I'm staying away from it, and I'll encourage mm-hmm. all of us to do so.
Okay.
The other thing from the city's point of view, Jonathan, we've asked residents in the area to not be consuming too much water. Obviously, the firefighters in that area are consuming a fair amount of water at this point, and there will be discoloration of the water in that area for a period of time because mm-hmm. of the amount of water flushing through pipes and the pressure of that. So I'd ask the residents in that area affected to limit their water usage, and in a few hours everything settles down, run their water until it comes clear, until all the sediment comes out of it. Because with the high pressure of the water coming through the pipes, you dislodge sediment that may not have been dislodged
Of course. Yeah.
Right. So,
it's high pressure for a reason, because it's there to, in this case, douse the neighboring buildings, or try to mitigate the fire, either to put it out or to stop it from spreading. Thanks for the information, Deputy Mayor Ellsworth. Let's quickly shift gears, if you don't mind, to the issue of accessibility. Sylvia, who lives in Paradise, brought up a very interesting point. She can't get the GO bus up there, but she did point out that there is at least one route from the city of St. John's with respect to Metrobus. To the best of my understanding, that's a pilot project, and GO bus is completely confined to the municipality of St. John's. Can you clarify that for me?
Yes, okay. So the route that goes into Paradise is actually a contracted route.
Mm-hmm.
It was supposed to end in June, but Mayor Bobbitt and the current council in Paradise extended it as they felt that the results that they were seeing and the ridership they were seeing was conducive to having a more in-depth look at providing service. So that is a contractual short-term agreement at this point that was just extended until the winter. In regards of GO Bus, Metrobus and GO Bus are subsidized by the City of St. John's, operated by the City of St. John's, and we contracted services to other municipalities. At present, Mount Pearl is the only other municipality who contracts service from us for paratransit service, which is GO Bus. So we do service St. John's and Mount Pearl. And we've had some discussions with Paradise over the last few months. Mayor Bobbitt and council are very interested in opportunities to see if they can provide these services or how they can best provide these services. And, you know, they've talked about accessible taxis throughout the piece. I heard the manager on there from Newfound Taxis. And, you know, we were 10 years here in St. John's trying to get the taxi companies to take these 10 licenses for accessible taxis. They're licenses that are held by the City of St. John's, but we were willing to allow any taxi company to utilize these taxi licenses. We could never get anybody to show interest in the licenses. The Administrator Walsh's department, again, came up a couple of years ago with a pilot project to assist in the capital cost of accessible taxis.
Mm-hmm.
And Newfound Taxi was actually a lucky company to avail of $50,000 from the provincial government to establish some accessible taxis. Once that was done, I lobbied council and got support from council that St. John's invested another $200,000 in 8 more accessible taxis cost sharing the capital with Newfound Taxi.
Was actually
done through a request for proposals. So any taxi company in St. John's could have applied for that funding. Newfound was the only one that applied.
Mm-hmm.
And what we see today is accumulation of Albert Newell's commitment to the community, to mobility impairments, and to accessibility transit. You know, so they were funded for 10 in total. But as you heard from the manager, the business case is there. They're continuing to build their fleet and add to their fleet as they're going. And, you know, the business model is there for other taxi companies, be it St. John's or other municipalities, to do the same. We've worked really hard now from within the city over the last 10 years to build an integrated transit system. What you see now is you see we have 6 or 7 accessible transit routes where all our buses are accessible on those routes.
Right.
And as we're replacing buses, we're adding more buses to make more of these routes accessible. So eventually, in the coming years, all of Metrobus's routes will be accessible.
Does this increase the ridership as well?
Well, it increases the ridership. It increases the flexibility. It increases individuals who have different abilities. It increases their flexibility to be able to move around the city at more leisure commute time for them. And they're not limited or restricted on transit. But with that, we've also invested, we'll be investing several $1 million in the coming years to create accessible bus stops. So that will make Metrobus itself fully accessible, and for eight or nine months of the year, that will make that system good for individuals with different abilities. We've invested and built a GO bus to the capacity we see today that St. John's invests somewhere around $3.2 million per year to create the paratransit system, and then we went out and instigated the accessible taxis. So now we have a full fleet and range of accessible transit in the City of St. John's accessible to all our residents.
So what we need to do is to ensure that this this model is mimicked by the outlying municipalities, or at least a cost-sharing mechanism will be implemented or suggested or discussed, so we can have GoBus or a similar service be provided to places such as Paradise.
Well, to all municipalities, I think the manager of Newfound, Mr. Hader, identified correctly that the mobility challenges on Northeast Avalon certainly lends itself to a better integrated transit system.
Yes.
And that's a full integration of transit system. What we find there in St. John's, Jonathan, and, you know, we're getting taxed and our prices, our cost to provide services is ever increasing because there's more and more people moving into the capital city because we're the only ones that have the service. You know, we are the only ones that provide integrated transit. We have people moving in from across the province into our municipality. So what's happening is that then we are being taxed as a municipality to continue to increase these services and programs, which we've been doing. At some point, we're going to have to look to the provincial government to help offset some of this cost because our taxpayers are bearing a fair amount of cost because we are the capital city. We are a city where, you know, you got the medical institutions there, you got programs and services there, you got all the frontline agencies and organizations that provide services in the city of St. John. So, you know, we'll continue to grow and build capacity, and I'll continue, as I've done for a long period of time, to be a strong advocate for accessibility in our community.
All right.
But John, there is interest from other municipalities, and, you know, they're trying to figure out and they're looking at what models can work for them in their municipality. You know, Paradise is a very large community with rural and urban components to it. You know, Mount Pearl is in with us, and we have constant consultation with Mount Pearl. There's been answer show from other municipalities. I know Mesa Gavin Walsh, they've got other incentives that they're looking at in working with community partners across the province. So, yeah, there's a lot of work being done in the accessibility piece for sure, so it should be.
Good. I will continue to hammer down some information from the minister's office as well on this, but thank you for all this this data, and once again we appreciate the work that we do here in the city of St. John's. We all do, because we all should have access to public transit. It's a good thing, and it's a good thing to make it accessible. Deputy Mayor Ellsworth, thanks for all of this information, particularly about the scene at Froude Avenue. And for those who are listening, we will try to provide updates as soon as we have them. I wish you a good night, sir.
You too. Once again, Jonathan, thoughts and prayers are with the families affected.
Yes, indeed. Thank you.
Good night.
Good night. We have Kimberly Oram of Fishing for Success on line two, but we're going to wait. We're going to go to the break early so we don't have to have a short call. We do, as Randy Sims used to say, have to pay the bills. We'll be right back.
Call now, 273-5211, or 1-888-590-8626. 1-888-590-VOCM. Nightline will return on the VOCM Big Land FM radio network. This is Nightline on the VOCM Big Land FM radio network.
And welcome back to the show. We're going to line number two. We're speaking with Kimberly Oren of Fishing for Success Island Rooms. How are you tonight?
Hello, I'm fine. How are you?
I'm all right, bye. I got to say, I had a great couple of days out around the bay. And
yes, beautiful weather.
Yeah, beautiful weather, some stellar icebergs, and I got to barbecue every meal. So, you know, I was in heaven. And you provide a little bit of divinity to those who come and take advantage of the programs that you have to offer. But Kimberly, a couple of things. We got the food fishery coming up next weekend. I'm wondering what's on the float, pun intended. And where the heck is the Capelin?
I don't know. It's not around here yet. I haven't heard anything from the scientists yet, if they've got a heads up on whether or not they're arriving soon. But haven't seen anything on the old Twitterverse. So, but as soon as we hear anything, we'll let everybody know.
Okay. So last year, I remember there was even a hashtag about the Capelin roll, and so people could chase it from bay to finger to arm,
yes.
I suppose.
So that hashtag will be up again, and we're partnering with the World Wildlife Federation and Petty Harbor Mini Aquarium to help people keep in touch with what's going on with Capelin. And they can even access a eCapelin website to get involved in that even personally. And when they find out about the Capelin, they can go on there and register what they see. So it will be an even more interactive activity this year than it was last year.
Wonderful. That is absolutely great. Now, let's move on to the issue at hand, which is next weekend. We're looking at the food fishery.
Yes.
This is a wonderful time. And I was as I was staring out at that ocean, I saw a few fish kicking around and probably stretching their, well, whatever, they don't have limbs, but, you know, relaxing for the last weekend that they have before they're being chased around by a bunch of people in putt-putts. What can we expect next weekend, Kim?
Well, next weekend, it looks like the first day, July 1st, we're expecting rain. So we're not too thrilled about the first day out. So I'm keeping an eye on that. We've got some folks scheduled for the first day out Saturday, and we're looking maybe to bump them to the second day, which, of course, July 2nd is a big day. It's the anniversary of the 25th year of the cod moratorium. So what better way to remember your ancestors and think about that date and what it means to our culture, but by going out on the water and catching a fish and then sharing a meal with your family. So that definitely Sunday is a big day for us in this province. And then Monday is a holiday and we can fish on Monday too. So that's a unique opportunity.
That's right. It is a holiday.
Yes, it's a holiday and you can fish on Monday, which is unique because it's the weekends of July and August. And if it happens to be a weekend with a holiday, it's that that holiday also.
That's excellent. I'm going to be landlocked this weekend. I'm going camping out to Malady Head. Can't wait for that, but I'm a little bit bummed that I won't be able to jump in the water.
I wouldn't have made that choice, but that's me.
Yeah, well, it was a collective choice, if you know what I mean, and I'm pleased with it because I'm going to get a chance to see about 10 friends that I don't see very often. So we have multiple campsites and probably multiple barbecues. So it'll be fun that way, and hopefully I'll come home and someone will have a fish for me.
There you go. That might happen, or maybe you can go trouting while you're out.
Yeah, you never know. Well, that would be nice too. So Kim, very exciting times. Let's quickly. Talk about what programs you're going to be offering in July and August.
Well, of course, we've got our Girls Who Fish program, which meets the first and third Sunday of every month. And so sign-ups are anytime you are interested in it. So you can contact us by email at fishing@islandrooms.org. Mm-hmm. And that program is for girls and women, 8 to 80, as we like to say. And, of course, this July 2nd will be going fishing. Weather allowable, of course, and so contact us for that. We're developing, but we've got our second year of our youth cod fishery. They're going to be coming out to Island Rooms this Tuesday, well, tomorrow, and they're going to be helping Leo cork the dories because we can't take them fishing yet.
Yeah.
And so that's that's another topic, but they'll be corking the dories. We've got a couple of Grand Bank dories that need their bottoms mended, and that's what they'll be doing, learning a traditional skill. And but folks can take a look at our website, which is www.islandrooms.org, and look at some of the programs we've got going. And of course, as all of us are resident tourists, oftentimes we've got wonderful programming that you can participate in to go out if you don't have access to a boat to come out and enjoy fishing programs with us. And it's not all about getting out in a boat either. There's a lot of work that fishermen do that occurs on land. And that work happens to be a lot of fun if you don't have to do it 24 hours a day. And that involves like net knitting and rope weaving and berry picking. And so we have programs that incorporate those activities too. So it can be a lot of fun.
I got some friends visiting and going to take them down to see you in July. I'll give you a heads up. I can't wait to see you folks in action. And I need to learn some skills from Leo, so warn him in advance.
Wonderful. Right. One of the things that we've been tweeting about, too, is Canada 150 project that we've got coming up. This is an opportunity for our young people to express their wish for Canada's next 150 years. And this is express their wish to make a better place for all of us, and it's through their art. And this is going to be opening July 12th at the Rooms, And of course, this is a mosaic created by 9 emerging youth artists. And the mosaic, of course, is in the shape of a cod. And so we're really excited about the work that these young people are creating.
Saw the link that you have you sent over to at VOCM Nightline. Looks very exciting.
Yes, and it's we're thrilled with the talent of our young people in this province, and can't wait to see what they create. So we'd like to see folks come out to that July 12th at 5 p.m. at the Rooms, and that'll be a wonderful event. Also, the day before that, July 11th at LSPU Hall, 7 p.m., we have a documentary. It's a Hot Docs documentary, mm-hmm. and it was at the Hot Docs Festival this past April.
That's up to Toronto, right?
Four times in Toronto. Yeah, sold out 4 times in Toronto. So this is called Tongue Cutters, and it's about the tradition in Norway of young people cutting out cod tongues. Sounds familiar, right?
It does sound familiar. Golly.
Yeah. Sounds familiar. Like maybe that happened in Newfoundland and Labrador back in the day, right? So, yeah, so Norway maintained that for their young people, right, even today. And so this documentary is about that exact tradition. And that's going to be at LSPU Hall from 7 to 9 p.m., July 11th. And following the documentary, we're going to have a panel of young leaders, like under 35, mm-hmm. Discussing what they think the future fishery should look like. And so we're asking people, of course, to come and look at that heartwarming documentary and join in the discussion with young people about what they would like to see for the future fishery.
It's got to be very exciting for you to get out of bed every morning.
I love it.
So much
yeah,
to do.
Definitely my passion, yeah.
Thank you for joining us, and islandrooms.org is the website, and you can find out more information or revisit what Kimberly and I were speaking about. I will be in touch very soon. I got someone in town who I think would enjoy dropping down for a visit. We'll talk soon, and thanks again. Say hi to Leo.
Thank you, Jonathan. Yep,
cheers.
Absolutely. Take care.
Bye-bye. Leo, the master filleter. I need to learn more. We're going to speak with the Minister of Seniors, Wellness and Social Development. We are speaking with Minister Sherry Gammon-Walsh of Placentia St. Mary's. Did I get it right?
No, you didn't. Children, seniors, and social development.
Thank you. My apologies, Minister. It's hard to keep the changes in my feeble brain, but greatly appreciated. I do have a couple of questions about other issues, but you are calling specifically about the Froude Avenue fire, so please go right ahead.
I am. It's been a very difficult day for our families on Froude Avenue. We currently have a total loss of 8 units. That displaces 20 tenants due to this fire this evening. We're currently working with the Red Cross now. My staff are over at Marguerite's Place. There's been a total of 36 units affected tonight due to heat, smoke damage. And so we're working diligently to find accommodations for all our tenants tonight. You know, we will ensure emergency accommodations are available for our displaced tenants. Mm-hmm. And any tenant that is out there, I ask that are on, you know, don't know where to call tonight, I ask them to call 693-8445.
693-8445 for those tenants who are displaced?
Yes, please.
Okay, I'm tweeting.
And then, you know, our immediate focus tonight is to find shelter. And we'll consider all options tomorrow to find permanent accommodations. And I just want to thank the first responders, thank the fire people, firemen and women. This was a very difficult day. It was a big fire, a huge fire, and there's been significant damage.
Yeah, there has been tremendous damage by the photographs that I've seen. I've only seen photographs. I don't go near fires because it's you're just in the way. And I don't understand why people would do that, and we have to make sure that the first responders get there. It's great to hear that we have emergency accommodations, Minister Gammon-Walsh. This is, I'm sure, a relief for many. Now the rebuilding will start tomorrow in terms of finding not only shelter, but clothing and food.
Yeah, and I'd just like to thank all our partners out there in community tonight, the Status of Women, the City of St. John's, and again, I cannot thank the firemen enough. To at the present moment, there's no fatalities. One person was taken to hospital. I need to thank the RNC also. This has been, like I just said, a difficult afternoon and a difficult evening for families who have lost everything.
Yes, indeed, they have. Minister Gavin Walsh, no doubt you're very occupied with this, so we can or cannot at your convenience discuss results from the Auditor General's report. If you wish, we can speak to that at a later date. There were some interesting conclusions about the Provincial Home Support Program. I would be interested in your comments, but I realize that tonight you are probably operating six telephones as we speak. So
four, actually.
Four.
So my focus is truly on the residents and the tenants tonight.
Yes, indeed.
Thank you very much for taking my call.
Not a problem. Call back at your convenience, and thank you for the good work you're doing tonight.
All right. Thank you very much.
Good night. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That was Minister Sherry Gammon Walsh of Children, Seniors, and Social Development. It's an interesting and challenging portfolio, no doubt, because it's the beginning and the golden years of humans and the social development, which, frankly, covers almost everybody. Social development is, I think, affects all of us in the sense that it, even if you're not benefiting from the services provided from social development, all of us know someone who is, and we are all part of the same community. So therefore, this is a challenging, and I would think, what's the word I'm looking for? The myriad of duties and interests that it entails. And of course, it is one of these programs that changes names or departments. Seniors Wellness and Social Development is what it used to be called. It's kind of confusing, but anyway, no doubt we will speak with the minister in the days to come because I have lots of questions about the annual report, specifically the subsidization for seniors for home support from Eastern and Western Health did not monitor, or they were not monitored, or nor were instances being followed up in where seniors were not provided with the home support hours that they had been approved to receive. That's critical to discuss. Also, they didn't follow the operating standards, policies, and procedures with respect to the home support services. So I look forward to speaking with Minister Gavin Walsh on that. Folks, if you've read the Auditor General's report, I have a medal hanging here for you. It's a lot to absorb. I've only gotten through, I think, a quarter of it. Hopefully I'll have it all read by this week. But if you have any questions you want me to ask the ministers, or anyone else on this report, give us a shout. With respect to the Provincial Home Support Program, in the words of the Auditor General, Terry Patton, the number of seniors aged 65 and older is 101,000. Think about that. Over the next 20 years, that's going to go to $154,000. Therefore, as the number of seniors continue to increase, in his words, it is expected that there will also be an increase in the demand for home support services. Bit of a no-brainer, hey? This allows us to live independently in our senior years and, of course, not tie up the system in other ways because we have and are able to benefit from healthy living and whatever that might entail for you. I don't know. I got to say, living around the Bay is pretty healthy living for the most part, but the major difference is if you don't have any healthcare facilities nearby, we're all one emergency away from relocation, and that is the grim reality that most of us face. 101,000 seniors aged 65 and older in the province. Yeah, that's going to grow. I think it's a beautiful opportunity for us to do a lot more. We're going to have a number of shows in July called Newfoundland Labrador 1 Million, where we're going to imagine the population of this province at double as to what it is right now. And this is a number that we need to consider as well. That would be 200,000 seniors aged 65 and older if we were to mirror it. We're going to be working with a number of individuals and brains on this series of shows, I would imagine. So if you have any input or any questions you'd like us to ask, give us a shout. Charlene McGraw on Twitter says I should visit Brigus. I do. I do at least once a year for a number of reasons. Got some friends who have a couple of spots out there, and family as well. It's lovely. I thoroughly enjoy it. And it's always great to see the Some Good Market there on Sundays as well. Yeah, so many places to visit. This year, my vacations are all like they were 2 years ago. Just going to be right here in the province because we have it all. And you'll never cover it all. You really won't. Get out there and do it. We're going to go to the last break for the evening. Afterwards, we got Wade Smith, who's going to talk about Whitburn Elementary. Right after this.
Call now, 273-5211 or 1-888-590-8626. 1-888-590-VOCM. Nightline will return on the VOCM Big Land FM radio network. This is Nightline on the VOCM Big Land FM radio network.
Welcome back to the show. We're going to speak with Mr. Wade Smith, whom we've spoken with on several occasions about Whitburn Elementary, as well as the private operating ambulance first responders network that he is a part of all across our glorious province. Mr. Smith, welcome back.
Hi, Jonathan.
How you doing?
I'm great.
I bet you are. Tell me about your victory lap.
Well, we had our council supper for the year. Actually, we had it the same evening, Friday evening, so that lasted. That was a good event. We had the principal and that there with us as well. And, of course, we had a good discussion, and it was just great. I mean, the whole school community, our kids, they're kind of hoping now that everything is going to stay the same. So mm-hmm. it was a great decision. I got to say, it was unanimous by all three judges, and I think it just goes to prove that, you know, when you stay the course and you got something worth fighting for, which was our children, that, you know, you can accomplish stuff. It's just a matter of having the right people, and I guess by saying that, I got to throw a big bouquet out to Dan Simmons and McGuinness Coopers for all that they've done. His expertise has basically kept us on the right path, and without him, I don't know. I think it would have been a lot harder battle. But
what was the name of the lawyer?
Daniel Simmons.
Daniel Simmons. Okay, thank you.
Yeah. He was involved many years ago with a couple of other elementary schools that his kids actually attended, and I guess he had a bit of background there. And he also was actually a student at Whitburn so many years ago. So he knew the community, he knew the school background, mm-hmm. and he knew that the Detroit community spirit and everything else that was here. So I got to say, and you know, and they took this on pro bono for us, and we just can't thank them enough.
I think, Wade, do you have children in the system?
My grandson is there. I actually went to school there myself, first when it was a high school years ago. And I think that was the confusion. When you look at the building, but there's only half of that building is actually used mm-hmm. for the elementary part. The other part is not even used, not even serviced by the district itself, actually. And there's no janitor or nothing.
Fascinating.
In the other section there now, right?
Okay, but obviously it's looked in on a regular basis to make sure everything is hunky-dory.
Oh, yes, mm-hmm. yeah, most definitely.
Okay, congratulations, sir. We have Patty Kennedy in the queue here, who's the chair of the Whitburn School Council. No doubt we'll continue the conversation. But listen, I know that you are fighting for not only the school itself, but for your community. You have a lot of challenges up that way. It is, some of them, seemingly insurmountable, this one being number one. And there you go. There has been a unanimous decision by three judges. My last question to you is, this happened before. There was a decision brought down in the courts, and the government seemingly ignored it. What protection do you have now?
Well, I guess the thing is that we have a elected group of trustees, ones that we have been communicating with, which that didn't happen in the past. And we've done this for the other school as well. I mean, Woodland would have lost their French room, their music room, band room. A lot of parents didn't realize that, but they started to realize that in the last few weeks. And I think I kind of taken back by Mr. Price's comments that he was surprised by the decision then to see if they were going to put us back on the chopping block again. I don't know. I think, in our view, I think that would be harassment. That would be just too much for our children. I mean, if you look at the scores, the what's called CRT scores, since 2011, ours went from 82 to 40. And that was mostly because of these reviews and the students being too much involved with not learning and just wondering where their school is going. So I think enough is enough. I think it's time now to accept the decision of both courts and move on and let our children learn in an atmosphere of safe and caring schools that we all talk about.
Yep, you're right. We can't have folks be confused on the way to their classroom. And we can't have folks
wondering if this is going to be the last time they drop their kids off for the season. And we need community. We need to foster community, and part of that is fostering security. So having a reliable school and reliable institution is certainly one of them, Wade.
Yeah, it's got to be stable. It's got to be a stable environment. I mean, you just said that before you went commercial. I was listening to you. I mean, we're talking about senior citizens down the road.
Yeah.
These are our future, and we need to put more resources, and we need to look at safe and caring environments to get these children where they need to be, and not on the roads where we see the police involved or an ambulance involved because of drugs and everything else. I mean, we need to foster a better community, and we have to do that in these small schools. I mean, there's a number of different schools across the province with 80 and 100 students or even more or even less, but it does not say they're not valuable. Right? We have to look at where they're to and what's necessary to get these young children to an adult stage. So they're the ones that are going to be looking after us, and we need to be able to have that foster and that security there.
Well said, sir. We're going to finish the show with Patty Kennedy, so I'll let you go now, and let's talk real soon. I have a few questions about private first responders, privately employed, etc., so I'll reach out to you. Thank you, Wade.
All right. Thanks, Alan.
Good night. Bye-bye. All right. Right now, the final word for the evening, we have about 6 minutes left, goes to the chair of the Whitburn School Council, Patty Kennedy. Hi, Patty.
Hi, Jonathan. How are you?
I'm probably, well, listen, I feel pretty good, but I'm sure everyone in Whitburn feels better.
We are feeling great. I'm sorry to say I only caught the tail end of Wade's. I'm actually at a meeting now, so I caught the tail end of Wade's conversation. So my only worry now is that I'm going to be repeating exactly what he just said.
Well, here it is. Unanimous decision by three justices in your favor. There was some kudos to the legal counsel involved. But
yes.
More importantly, let's discuss your feelings, because like Mr. Smith, you do represent Whitburn, and you are now looking at a building which will represent your future.
Yeah, well said. As Wade said, I just caught the end of his conversation, and I have to echo exactly what he said about Dan Simmons and the group at McGinnis Cooper Law Office. I mean, he's been with us since 2012. Unfortunately, we got to see the ins and outs of too many systems, too many processes in this province, things that took us as a council away from successfully achieving our mandate as a council, and that's to help with fundraising and the educational concerns, bringing matters of concern from the community and the parent community, working together to better our school. And the past couple of years, it seems that we've been taken away from that and all the good things that we're supposed to be involved in this challenge to save our school. So we thank Dan for taking that massive burden off our shoulders as best he could. And we, in turn, worked with him and worked with the support of the community and the parents. And eventually, the parts of the province and parts of the country, we picked up quite a bit of momentum
Yes.
this past year. So it was very difficult. And like I said, it was unfortunately, we got to see the negative side of how things work within our own education system and government. But I guess sometimes you need to see the harsh truth so you're better equipped to fight the battle. And I certainly think that we were well equipped to fight the battle with Mr. Simmons and our own particular school council. I mean, our group have spent more time together this past year than with our own children and our own families. But at the end of the day, when it comes to your school, you're willing to do whatever it takes, especially when you know that what you're fighting for is very, very right.
When you're not only fighting for what is very, very right in the assessment of the town of Whitburn, but your community is growing, and therefore there is a projection for the number of kids who will be taught at Whitburn Elementary as opposed to bust over to Woodland. And no doubt, I would think that Woodland is relieved.
Well, you know what? One of the reasons why I'm glad that I got to talk to you tonight is because I think in this struggle, the past, not this just past year, but the past couple of years, we and a lot of people in our fight, a lot of people lost sight of the children. they lost sight of the fact that it should have never come down to a school versus school, should have never come down to a community versus a community. All the work that was done in both schools, all the work in particular that was done at Woodland the past year, I mean, that was done for everybody. It was done for both school populations. And I, on behalf of our council, I have to thank the community of Woodland. I have to thank the staff of the school and the representatives on their school council when we had to work together as a transition team. That's just part of the process, as they say, just in case this didn't happen in our favor. And I can't say anything but to describe them, only to say they were gracious, they were open, they were welcoming, and I've said it 100 times before, it was never the issue of whether our children would be welcomed or loved or taken care of or educated. That was never the issue. But somewhere in all of this, there were times when we were cited as being the villains, you know, to some people in the province, in different areas. We were cited as people who just wanted to keep our school. They never took the time to see the reasoning why. And that's one of the small good points of this process being dragged out so long as it was and getting us hit every year with a review, is that people got to take the time and say, well, hang on now, this is happening again. There must be some reason why they're fighting so hard. It just can't be because we love our school or because we want to keep our school because of the groups that use it or because we don't want our children on the bus. I mean, we're very well aware that, you know, declining population and reconfiguration and centralization, it doesn't just happen in education. It happens in every walk of life. Everything from hospitals and healthcare and government downsizing. I mean, we know all of that. Mm-hmm. But we're just glad that people got a chance to say, well, you know what? Maybe there's something to what they're saying. The fact that we were the only school in this feeder system that were up for review. The fact that we were only the only school that was guaranteed, not a projection, but there was going to be a guaranteed rise in enrollment for the next few years. So the fact that there were parts of the review process and documents given to people that they weren't accurate. And we fought and we fought and we fought. And as time went by, we were being contacted by other school councils in the province, other schools across the country that said, you know what? We know what you're saying is true. We've read what you published.
So that's an interesting thing, and maybe we can talk about that at another night. We're totally out of time here. But
sure.
The thing that I would like to discuss is the misrepresentation by government of the actual numbers. So that, to me, is still mind-boggling, and I have yet to read the decision. So if you have access to it, and you probably do, you're probably framing it right now, could you send me a copy to nightline@vocm.com?
We certainly can.
Thank you, Patty.
Thank you for the time, and thank you to everybody who supported us. We will stay open and remain open in a practical amount of time until such time when they come to visit again.
Thank you very much, and congratulations one more time. Patty
thank
Kennedy.
You. You have a good night.
You as well. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. We're going to finish the show with, a moment of reflection, not only for Jared Moffat, Timothy McLean, who died about a week ago while working on the transmission line project with Newfoundland Labrador Hydro, but we should also spend a moment of reflection for those who are 22 people, I believe Minister Gammon Walshen said, who are without homes tonight at the Froude Avenue fire. Hopefully we can do everything that we can tomorrow to clothe and feed and support them as they try to rebuild. Thanks for a great evening. Producer Patrick Myler and I will join you tomorrow. Actually, no, I'm with Dave Williams tomorrow night, am I not? Yes. Tune in to a rebroadcast of this morning's VOCM Open Line with guest host Daryl Blast Across the Bow Power. Until tomorrow, Lila Tuff.